All right, let's do a little light after Lee here on Darren Donick and Chase. We just spoke with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. Now let's speak with Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll keep this college football theme rolling right along here on this rainy Tuesday. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're well.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Vanderbilt's next opponent in this Georgia team. We know they're on defense. They're ferocious. It was a sight to see how they swallowed up Clemson early on. You know, looking at their schedule, you've of course got the big game in Jacksonville, the big outdoor cocktail party. But really, outside of that, at Auburn is really it. I mean, it looks like it's set up, and I know it's a dangerous game. It's, you know, they've played, what, three games. It's dangerous to go on and give them chalk up all these wins. But it certainly does look like, when you see the way they're equipped, barring any catastrophe with just injury after injury after injury to major players, it's set up for them to go to Atlanta undefeated. Is that fair to say?
It's a favorable schedule by SEC standards, or, you know, I think some Big Ten fans would argue by Big Ten standards as well. Big Ten's, especially the East, is looking pretty good right now. But you look at some of the games that could potentially trip them up in their home. You know, Arkansas, we'll find out a little bit more about Arkansas this week when they leave Fayetteville. It's a neutral site game against Texas A&M, but they get Arkansas at home, and they get Kentucky at home. They get Missouri at home. Now, you mentioned the Auburn game. Obviously, that's not going to be easy, and they get Florida at a neutral site. But, like, had they forced to go to Kentucky or maybe Arkansas, you'd say, okay, that could trip them up. But I'm with you. They are looking looking pretty good right now. Just a convincing take-care-of-business win against South Carolina on Saturday night. And there's a lot to like about this team. And I'm sure you guys saw the Shane Beamer quote. When he was asked about the game, why the Georgia defense is so good, and he's just like, dude, look at their roster. I mean, they've got five stars all over the place. It was refreshing to hear him talk like that. And he was probably, you know, in the heat of the moment, he just watched his team play against all those five stars, so he probably realized what the talent gap there was, but that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was a funny quote. Right, he just said what we say out loud all the time, but you just rarely hear coaches say it, so that was refreshing. What did you make of the Auburn game at Penn State? That was a fun game to watch Saturday night. Of course, Penn State came away with the 8-point victory, but what did you make of the game as a whole?
Yeah, great game. Everything about it was great. Just as college football fans, like seeing teams that you don't see play. I mean, I guess those teams have played in the bowl game in the past, but that's not a normal matchup. I thought Penn State made a statement for the second time this year. You know, they go to Wisconsin, their defense is on the field for 96 plays in that game, and they hold Wisconsin, I believe, to one touchdown. I thought Sean Clifford, who's been, you know, not a lot of, I'm sure people in Penn State are talking about it, but everyone's like kind of fallen in love with, well, maybe before this weekend, but Will Levis at Kentucky, you know, the Penn State transfer. And if Levis would have had a great year at Kentucky's new offense and Sean Clifford struggled, a lot of people would be putting heat on that staff for choosing the wrong guy. But which Clifford, I don't have the stats in front of me. It was like 20, only a few incompletions against a good Auburn defense. And, you know, Dotson, the wide receiver, was outstanding. Just a really important win for James Franklin in the Big Ten. Not a terrible loss for Auburn. I don't think, you know, I'm sure Auburn fans would beg to differ, but I don't think anyone's expecting this Auburn team to, you know, win the West or be a playoff team. So there's no shame in going up to Penn State and losing that game. But I thought it was just kind of another statement by Penn State. And look at the Big Ten East. You know, Michigan State's 3-0 with a win over at Miami. They've looked good. Obviously, Michigan's looked good so far. Ohio State hasn't looked great there. So I'm really intrigued by what's going on with Big Ten East.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what do you make of this Penn State team? Now, we're going to learn a lot about them because they've got to go to Iowa. They've got to go to the Shoe in Columbus and take on Ohio State. They're at Maryland. They've got Michigan at home, at Michigan State. So we're going to learn a lot about them. But, I mean, right now what you've seen, how good do you really think they are?
I think they're playoff good. If that's the real Sean Clifford, if they can get that, you know, type of production, and I'm clicking through, I think, to find out his numbers. Yeah, it was 28 for 32. He is completing 71% of his passes, only 4 touchdowns, but in 1 interception this year, and averaging 8.1 yards per attempt. That is a very good yards per attempt on a high completion rate like that. Sometimes when you see completion rates up over 70%, it's a lot of dinking and dunking, but when you're averaging 8.1 yards per pass attempt, that means you're throwing the ball downfield, making some big plays there. The defense is good. It's been good under Brent Pry. You know, going back, Brent Pry is now the only on-field assistant who is still with James Franklin from year one at Vanderbilt. So he has been with them through it all. So, yeah, I like this Penn State team. And you know, if you throw out that 0-4 start last year, that throughout the weird 2020 season, James Franklin's done a great job at Penn State. And that's why he's being mentioned by so many people as a potential head coach at USC.
Yeah. Which is interesting. By the way, USC got down 14-0 and came back and I think, 42 unanswered to beat Washington State. LSU, Mississippi State, that's how they started off last year. Of course, we know there was no out-of-conference games, and I remember that game. It was a crazy game in Baton Rouge as Mississippi State came away with the victory. This year it's in Starkville. Mississippi State's coming off the stinging loss. LSU, we already know they've got their hiccup at UCLA. By the way, how about UCLA's gag over the weekend? How do you see LSU-Mississippi State playing out?
You know, Mississippi State's very close both ways. I mean, you could argue they should have won that game against Memphis, and, you know, the weird call at the end of the game. But they almost lost in week one to Louisiana Tech. They were down, 20 points in the fourth quarter, and they scored the last 3 possessions to win 35-34. And they had a very under-the-radar dominating win over NC State. I don't think the offense looked great, but 24-10 over, I think, a pretty good NC State team. We don't know yet, so probably a better defensive Mississippi State team than some expected. If you're LSU, I think that you've kind of had this game circled. You know, this is what set the tone last year for that miserable season for LSU. They looked like they had never seen or never even watched film of a Mike Leach offensive team. And the bad thing was, is usually it takes a while for Mike Leach's offense to get going. That was the highlight of the season offensively for Mississippi State in week one. So, you know, I'd expect LSU to go in there and win this game, but this LSU team, it's far from, you know, a complete team. They've had some key injuries on both sides of the ball. John Emery, the running back they expected to have, the former five-star, was expected to be their number one running back, academically ineligible. So there's still some drama going on there. So this is sort of like an intriguing early season barometer game, even though both teams have already played big games. You know, we saw LSU at UCLA. So I think it's a very important game for LSU.
Are you buying Michigan's start, or is it just beating up on some teams they're supposed to beat up on?
I'm buying it. You know, it's a little bit of both. They made Washington look bad. Now, Washington has not looked good, although they, you know, keep doing the transitive law here. They just pounded Arkansas State, and they shut them down. Arkansas State had been a very good offensive team so far. But Michigan's kind of found their identity. They really, really run the ball well. And, again, they haven't left home. Western, you know, they beat Western Michigan 47-14. Western Michigan beat Pitt last week. We all know Pitt won at Tennessee. You know, Northern Illinois, they beat them 63-10. Northern Illinois won at Georgia Tech. It's not a great Northern Illinois team, so you can look at it like that. And you know, they got another one at home against Rutgers, and then they go to Wisconsin. But you know, look at their schedule. They go to Wisconsin. They go to Michigan State. All their difficult games before Penn State are on the road. Before Ohio State are on the road. So you know, I hope they keep it up. No dog in the hunt. I just kind of like when Michigan's good at football. I think it's fun. I think Jim Harbaugh's good for college football. I know he annoys a lot of people. And he's another guy. Like, I'll defend James Franklin. I'll defend Jim Harbaugh. People group him, like, with the Scott Frost, you know, as far as hires that haven't quite worked out. But go to Wikipedia. Look at Jim Harbaugh's record. He's won 10 games, I think, 4 of the last 5 complete seasons, you know, taken away from not including last season. So I know there's been some weirdness and some hiccups there, but I think this is a pretty good Michigan team.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, one of their college football editors. And Mitch, one of the things that I know you emphasized during your week in coverage of the game is the recruiting beat. And the question was asked in a mailbag in one of the articles in The Athletic. How would Deion Sanders recruit at USC? I hadn't thought about it. But I also thought this, with Florida State struggling, his alma mater, what do you think about him down the road there? I never would have thought that talk
is already in play.
Yeah, like, so just tell me, do you think Deion, you know, has eyes on this right now? So, you know, going to the next step.
I can't imagine he would not want to be the head coach of Florida State, his alma mater. And, yeah, you were referencing Ari Wasserman's recruiting mailbag today where someone had asked that because Reggie Bush, I believe it was, threw out Deion's name. And, you know, no doubt Deion would recruit incredibly well wherever he went. The thing is, you know, proving that you can run a program, proving you can be the CEO of a head coach. So I think if he is the coach at Jackson State for 3 or 4 years, and they look like a well-coached team, an organized team, and all that stuff, I think he definitely becomes a candidate for a bigger job if he wants to go that route. Right now, I would be a little hesitant. That's why, you know.
You want to see it for longer.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're talking about Florida State, but if you're USC, you know, someone like James Franklin, who's been a head coach for, you know, what, 9, 10 years, and there's a lot more established candidates. But he's definitely intriguing. I think a lot of it, when we hear his name, we kind of scoff just because he's Deion and all that. But, you know, he had by far the best recruiting class for an FCS school that we've seen ever this past year. So attracting talent would not be an issue for Deion Sanders wherever he was head coach.
We are, I guess, longing for some new blood, more contenders to spice things up. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, what does Florida's, you know, their effort against Alabama mean. I'm also watching out west. Like, I'm thinking, can somebody put together a really good year? Maybe it's Oregon. I watched a lot of the BYU game. I got back from the Vanderbilt-Stanford game. I flip on BYU-Arizona State. Arizona State, I thought, goofed up an opportunity to maybe blow by them there in the second half. But BYU's putting together a pretty good year. But tell me, who should I be watching for some new blood?
Yeah, well, BYU's 3-0 against the Pac-12 South. And that's a surprise, you know, beating Arizona, Utah, and Arizona State. And then they get South Florida, Utah State. They'll be 5-0 when they play Boise State. So that is, you know, losing Zach Wilson, that's a big, you know, not many people expected that. You know, the boring answer is Oregon because they won at Ohio State. But I think, I don't know who has emerged yet as that new blood, but I think the positive sign for us that want to see some new blood and don't like the same teams every year is the fact that some of the top teams that we just chalked up as foregone conclusions have shown some signs of weakness. Like Clemson offensively has been, you know, they've really struggled. Oklahoma has not looked great this year, you know. Florida is one of those teams to me. They're so intriguing because Dan Mullen keeps proving what a good coach he is, and this was another question in that recruiting mailbag we did today. He's just not recruiting at a level right now where he's going to have a roster that's close in talent to Georgia and Alabama and soon what Texas A&M is doing. You know, they've only got one top 100 player signed for next year. Now they're involved with some other guys, and Dan Mullen is proving that he can coach them up, and maybe he doesn't need that roster, but it's just been kind of proven over time, to have sustained success at a national elite level, you need a more talented roster than what Florida has right now. So that to me, it's weird to call Florida a sleeping giant because it's a program that's won 2 national championships under 2 different coaches in the last, 15 years. But if Dan Mullen could somehow notch up that recruiting just a little bit, I really think that that's a team that could be a consistent playoff team because I'm just a big believer in his coaching.
I know people are aware of this, but it's so amazing. You talk to any coach behind the scenes, kind of off the record, whether you're talking about football, basketball, baseball, and they will all have some things to say in terms of what they're seeing with the transfer rule on top of the COVID thing. Like, if you're a senior in high school right now, you know, you got a lot to deal with, especially. Now, you know, as each year goes by, it'll probably shake out more, but what are you hearing, Mitch? What trends are you seeing, especially for this upcoming recruiting class? It came to light, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier in the week was Ty Chandler, Eric Gray. You see them, they're having big games right away for their new teams. Henry To'oto' is playing a lot for Alabama. This is just a new world here, and that it affects especially the high school seniors this year.
Yeah, well, one thing that I was glad to see, and it's not official yet, is it looks like the NCAA is going to bump up the 25, the hard cap of 25 signees a year. Because what was happening, it was hurting high school players because a lot of colleges, almost every school is holding back offers. So like it's typical, not every school can have 25 a year just because of the overall number, but let's just for argument's sake, every school could sign 25 a year. They were signing 22 a year because you want to leave some scholarships open for transfers. Well, some mid, that's not mid-low major, that's more of a college basketball term, but some smaller G5 schools aren't signing many high school players at all. They're all going to the transfer portal. Texas State, I believe, did not sign a high school player last year. They all transfers.
That's so tough. If you're a parent of a high school senior, you hear that. That's not good, right?
Right, because there's fewer offers going out. And so that's why they're raising the limit up to 7 based on how many transfers you have. So if you have 25, if you were able to sign 25 this year and you had at least 7 players transfer, you can sign 32 players. So that's good. Because what we don't want, and nobody wants this, is to take away opportunities, full scholarship opportunities for kids out there who could potentially play college football. So to me, that's one of the biggest issues is just the lack of high school senior, not just the maybe they don't have the ability to go play for the SEC school or the Power 5 schools. It's the trickle-down effect where 5 years ago there's X amount of offers going out to high school players, and now there's only 80% of that because schools are just holding back scholarships. And there's also a lot of guys that were decent college football players. I don't have the numbers that transferred and never found a home. You know, it's the whole grad.
That's the other thing that I hear a lot from the coaches is take a look. And Darren, you'll remember this. One of our recent conversations with Herm Edwards, he called this before it happened. He said, "You watch how many people get left in that transfer portal. They're still sitting there. They have nowhere to go. Nobody offers them a job. In fact, they were telling a story about one of his players. I think it was his kicker. One of his kickers went into the Prince. He went into the portal, gave up his scholarship. Nobody took him, so he had to beg his way back on. He had to walk back on to Arizona State. And to his credit, he's won the job. He's back in the mix and playing for them. But it's a tough story. He gave up the scholarship in the process.
Yeah, it's you know, some of these guys, the transfer report, I'm not going to say the numbers are inflated. They are what they are. But there's a lot of guys that might, you know, graduate from a school and aren't really welcome back, because what a lot of schools will do is, you know, say your scholarship's guaranteed for 4 years. If you graduate and don't really, not into our plans, time to move on. So they could put their name in the transfer portal as a fifth-year senior with 1 year of eligibility. If they find something they like, they might take that, but, you know, they're fine with moving on. I think there's a certain percentage of those guys, too. But there's also those guys that leave after their freshman year, a quarterback, and they're just either not happy and they want to find somewhere else to play, and they realize that, you know, with these schools, they're hitting the schools are so active in the transfer portal, the school sites are set a little bit higher than that kid right there. So it's kind of there's definitely kids that get lost in the shuffle, and they're giving up free scholarships. Everyone has different goals, and all these kids want to go play in the NFL. But it's sort of like once you get that free ride, sometimes you just probably should hold on to it. But that's a whole another topic for another time.
Mitch, real quick on the way out, just because they're in our backyard, I know we don't talk about them much, but there was news here in the last, I don't know, 72 hours or so. Austin Peay is leaving the OVC for ASUN. Well, what does the future look like for the Ohio Valley Conference? Because this is not the first team to leave here recently.
Yeah, I mean, good question. I wouldn't say I was surprised by that, but it's just someone who follows the local college scene here. It's good to have so many schools, you know, in the OVC, and always enjoy going to the OVC basketball tournament. Don't pretend to be an insider or have that much knowledge on the situation there, but it's to me, when I think OVC, I think basketball, just because Division I basketball and tournament, obviously the league has football, and they've had some very good football teams over the years. But it's just, it's going to have to, you know, I don't know what the numbers are right now, if they feel like they need to replace Austin Peay, but, it's a program that has some decent potential. I know they've been recruiting very well for the FCS level. Obviously, we know what Will Healy did there. So it's been an interesting ride for the Governors from dropping football to coming back and being one of the worst teams in the FCS in the country to kind of making national headlines with their turnaround and then now switching leagues.
Yeah. You just wonder if it's going to be around very much longer. Or like you said, yep. Is it just going to be another shuffle and they're going to find some more schools to join their conference? Mitch, always appreciate it. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, that is Mitch Light from The Athletic. Willie, why don't you tell us about Loan Pronto?
All right, let me do that. Loan Pronto, remember, they want to remind you that your home value is way up. If you're in our listening area, that's one of the benefits you have of a growth area like Nashville and the surrounding areas. Your home value is up. And with mortgage rates back to all-time lows, it creates a great situation to where if you call Loan Pronto and refinance, you can get cash out of your home's equity at a really good rate, and you can reinvest that money back into your home or use it for something you need right now. Maybe it's tuition money, maybe it's a debt consolidation, maybe it's just to pay off some credit cards so you can get back to where you want to be. So take advantage of this opportunity that's there by calling Loan Pronto. They can refinance your loan at a super low rate, pay the closing costs for you, and get you the cash out that you need, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 grand, whatever it might be, depending on your situation. So don't just sit on that home's new value. Use it to your advantage. Loan Pronto's all-digital platform makes it fast and easy, and if you act now, you can even skip your next two house payments. Call Loan Pronto, 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780, or go to loanpronto.com and ask them about that Loan Pronto zero-cost cash out refi. Equal housing lender.
NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero cost option.